The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiou.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. The business press has for decades interviewed CEOs as strategists, asking them about their growth plans and competitive landscape. But that is only a small part of a CEO's job. Their true 24/7 role is to lead and manage, build a team, create a sense of mission, and foster a high-performing culture. But how do they do that? And how did they learn how to do that? With simple open-ended questions like this, Adam Bryant started interviewing CEOs and other leaders in 2009 and launched Corner Office in New York Times. The feature quickly developed a loyal following of readers who turned to Corner Office twice a week for insights, takeaways, and broader life lessons. The Corner Office, indispensable and unexpected lessons from CEOs on how to lead and succeed, quickly became a New York Times bestseller. Adam Bryant earlier this year launched his current book, Quick and Nimble, Lessons from Leading CEOs on How to Create a Culture of Innovation. Adam has served as the New York Times Senior Editor for Features, Deputy National Editor, and Deputy Business Editor. He was previously a Senior Writer and Business Editor at Newsweek, and it is my pleasure to have him as my guest today. Adam, thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Adam, how many industry leaders, CEOs, did you interview as the basis of this book?
More than 200, and as the months have gone by, it's been more than 300 now.
So it's a pretty wide base of individuals who obviously, if not all of them, most of them run publicly traded companies?
And small private ones. I really tried to embrace diversity in every sense of the word when I launched the feature back in 2009. So I interview leaders of for-profit companies, not-for-profit, big companies, small companies, university presidents. I interviewed Mario Batali, the chef, and Kenny Chesney, the country music star, because I really believe that leadership happens everywhere, not just at companies.
Without question, it happens at work and it happens at home. obviously, it happens on the stage, on a country music stage, and everywhere in between. Yeah. So, is there a common thread that connects the thinking and actions of the CEOs you interviewed? What did you find?
It's a good question, and I framed the question in a very specific way for the first book I wrote, because I do feel that a lot of people, when they talk to successful people like CEOs, they tend to ask the same question, which is, what led to your success? And what I've come to appreciate over time is that that's not a very good question. And the reason is that you tend to get fairly predictable answers. You probably get some variation of hard work and perseverance and passion, and those kind of answers aren't really insightful or surprising. So for the first book, the question I framed more specifically is, what is it about the CEOs that I've interviewed that explains why they got promoted over everyone else all the way to the corner office? What qualities did they have in slightly greater abundance than the people a couple of ranks below them who maybe didn't get promoted to the corner office. Because if you frame the question that way, that assumes that a lot of the qualities that people hear about, like hard work and perseverance, that those are kind of table stakes. And you say, okay, if everybody has those roughly, then what separates the people? So that was really the question that informed the first book and the question that informed the second book. And again, I really believe in the art of asking the good, dumb question, as I like to say, is when it comes to corporate culture, what are the biggest drivers of corporate culture? Because culture is one of those really fuzzy words. If you and I stood in front of a whiteboard, Chris, and said, well, what is culture? We could put 100 things on the board and probably all of them would be right. I think the real important exercise is to ask yourself, what are the most important aspects of culture? What are the things that, if done well, have an outsized positive impact, and if done badly or not at all, have an outsized negative impact? And so that was kind of the framework that I put on the book about culture.
So what did you find the most important aspects of culture are among those that you interviewed?
There are several. I do like to start with this notion of what I call a simple plan. I believe it's a leader's job to take the complicated company they're running in, the complicated industry, and boil down for their employees a simple plan of to be able to stand up and say, this is where we're going, everybody, and this is how we're going to get there, and these are the three things that we're going to measure to track our progress. Because you know, all the brain science shows that most people can't remember more than three things to sort of day to day, maybe four, but not more than that. So a leader has to be able to say, these are the three things that matter. These are the three things that we're going to measure. That has a very powerful effect, because if you do that, then everybody at the company can understand how the work they are doing contributes to those broader goals. And I do think as human beings, we're wired to contribute. We want to be part of a team. We want to help the broader team win. It's a leader's job to say, well, this is how you can contribute to that. So I think that can have a very powerful effect on culture. And if you don't have a simple plan, if you're the kind of leader who stands up and says, okay, everybody, we've got 12 priorities for this year, well, then you don't have any priorities if you have that many. And what that leads to is silo behavior in organizations, where people in different departments and even as sort of individuals are pursuing their own goals. And that's where you get the turf wars and the backstabbing. And, you know, as one CEO said to me, silos are what topple great companies. So you really need a counterweight to that siloed behavior. And I think that's having a simple plan.
That is so true, because again, as you say, most of us cannot remember more than a few things at the time, and if you have a big long laundry list of things that are important, by the sheer fact of the size of the list, pretty much everything becomes secondary, because there's just too many to chew at any particular time.
Right, and so people throw up their hands, and then they just start pursuing their own goal, which starts the silo behavior.
And it's entirely correct. In my experience, each and every time you have something that is so vertical and so stratified in a vertical kind of way, it's incredibly easy to topple, because it does not have a wide base. And yep. A question with regard to the makeup or the aspects of those CEOs. Clearly, they have to have a vision. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they have to plan. They have to have a yardstick so that they measure things. To what degree do you find that good, successful, progressive CEOs communicate the vision and the plan and the measurement to the rest of their employees all the way down the line?
I think that's a huge part of being an effective leader. I do believe that in that expression, there is no such thing as over-communication. And I've just heard so many great stories from the CEOs I've interviewed. They often go through the sort of same learning curve, which is when they first become leaders and and CEOs, they find themselves standing up in front of their employees and maybe repeating the same message over and over. And they start feeling like everybody knows this. You know, I said this last week, I said this last month. They must be getting bored of me saying it. And what they come to realize is that it's important to repeat things and it's important to communicate, because to me the best insight is that it's not so much what you are saying that matters. The point is that you are battling the void, because if you leave a void of communication, just human beings will, and the way we're wired, we will start filling that void with all sorts of rumors and conjecture, and so that's why you have to fill that void, even if it's within the same, even if it's with the same message over and over, because that's what people will internalize. And I heard a really terrific story about this from a CEO that really crystallized the importance of battling that void. And I call it the nuts in the kitchen story. So this CEO is running a medium-sized tech company. And at one point, they decided to change the vendor that provided the food in the company kitchen. Like a lot of tech firms, you know, they provide free food to their employees. But the company didn't tell the employees they were doing this. So over a couple of weeks before the transition, the supplies were starting to dwindle down in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And apparently she started hearing that there were all these rumors flying around the company that the company was in trouble, because why else would they, would the kitchen not be stocked? It must be that they're running low on money and the company's in trouble. And so once she discovered this, she stood up in front of everybody and said, look, you know, it's just the food. It's just the nuts in the kitchen. That's all it is. And this is why we're doing that. And that was a very powerful lesson for her, that it's always important to communicate and do it on a regular basis so that you don't leave that void.
It's very true. Absent clear explanation of what it is that is happening at any given moment, people will make their, will draw their own conclusions, and those conclusions are rarely, if ever, accurate.
Exactly.
So, being nimble, we've got a couple of minutes before the break, but let's just start it. Obviously, it would be counterintuitive to think that a company can succeed, or any organization can succeed, if it's pretty fat and difficult to maneuver. Mm-hmm. But being nimble and being quick takes a very different meaning every day in business. Yeah. The reaction time needs to be cut to almost, you know, if there could be a non-existent reaction time, that's what clients want to see.
Yeah.
So,
and I guess I would like to mention the first part of your point there. I do think there was a time where, you know, I get your point. As a company, you don't want to be sort of fat and slow, but there was a time in business where the commonly held notion was that successful companies pick a strategy and it's sort of slow and steady. You know, we're going to work this, or we're going to execute it and get the flywheel effect that Jim Collins talked about, and a lot of the companies that he talked about in Good to Great are ones in fairly stable industries that really had that strategy that they stuck to. So we can talk about this more later, but I think the environment has changed. It wasn't always that you had to be quick and nimble, but I do think it is now.
It certainly is. Let's talk more about that on the other side of a short break. My guest is Adam Bryant. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Efesiou understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Efesiou. My guest is Adam Bryant. Please visit his website, adambryantbooks.com. And again, that's Adam. Last name is spelled B-R-Y-A-N-T, books.com. And follow him on Twitter at NYT Corner Office. N as in New, Y as in York, T as in Times, Corner Office. For information on this program, speaking engagements, and other activities, please visit my website, chrisefesiou.com or straightupwithchris.com. My Facebook page is Chris Efesiou, and on Twitter, I'm Chief Daddy Officer. Terrific first segment in our discussion with Adam. We were talking about the value of being nimble and being quick. And before the break, he was contrasting how this was not necessarily the same in previous years, because being a company that stayed the course and executed and measured its results was a way of doing business. So isn't that what your point was, Adam?
Exactly, and this is really crystallized. I interviewed the new CEO of Microsoft recently, Satya Nadella, and he really captured this notion that I think a lot of companies, especially big established legacy companies, are dealing with. And he said that for a long time, companies like his were focusing on optimizing the formula they had. You know, we know what we're doing. Let's just get better at it, more efficient, lower our costs, keep optimizing the existing formula. And he said the new challenge is to find the new formula. And I think that is the challenge that so many companies of all sizes in all sorts of different industries are facing right now, because with the internet, the relentless pace of change in this global economy, just everything is so fast that you have to be able to respond quickly. And it's the speed with which you respond that I think is going to separate the winners from the losers.
That's entirely true. Is that speed a factor when companies of today are trying to attract new key employees, or perhaps not even so key employees, that years ago it was this long process of posting a job and almost like take a number and get in line kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas it would appear that today that process has been circumvented and or at least has been cut short, because when you see the talent and you want to attract that talent, you have to act fast, because not only are you seeing what that individual has to offer, but your competitors see it as well. So whoever gets to that person first with the best offer is the one that wins.
And I think the point you just made is so clear in Silicon Valley, because I believe we're getting a glimpse of the future of workplace culture in Silicon Valley for a very simple reason, which is that there's such an imbalance of supply and demand of talented software developers and coders that I've come to appreciate just having interviewed so many tech CEOs, that they essentially have two jobs at the end of the day. One of them is to recruit the best talent they can, because there's a shortage of that top talent and they are fighting with everybody else to attract that person. But that's only part of the job, because once you get them in your company, that person is now getting headhunted every single day by your competition. So you have to create a kind of culture, and I know this sounds pretty obvious to say, but to create a culture where people want to come to work every day, rather than just sort of, I've got to go punch the clock and it feels like work. And so that's why these tech CEOs are not only innovative in their industries, but they're innovative in terms of culture. They do things that are really intriguing and very different. They come up with out-of-the-box solutions. I mean, I heard one surprising thing from a guy named Phil Libin, who runs Evernote. He was talking to his wife. His wife works at the company, and he was saying, you know, what can I do to help retain the talent here? And she said, house cleaning. So now the company pays for house cleaning twice a month for every single employee at the company. And what a great retention tool, right? It probably doesn't cost that much in the grand scheme of things, but everybody likes a clean house or apartment. And you got to figure the spouse, partner, boyfriend, girlfriend at home certainly loves it too, and is probably going to make people stick around longer.
Without question. We just got a question from one of our listeners, right along those lines, and you have answered part of it, but I'll do it justice and ask the question. It comes from Howard from Pittsburgh. He says, Adam, how are CEOs shifting the paradigm to engage in effective corporate culture?
In terms of the paradigm of leadership, I think what has changed fundamentally is that CEOs and leaders used to be able to get away with more kind of a command and control approach. They were the boss. You're going to do what I tell you to do because I'm the boss. And I think a whole bunch of things have changed beyond what I've already mentioned. But the shift was captured by a CEO I interviewed recently, where he said it's no longer command and control. It's about sense and respond. And I think that's just a great way of describing what a CEO's job is these days, because it's not only sensing and responding to all the marketplace and economic shifts, but also sensing and responding internally, because you have to have super sensitive antenna to be an effective leader and build the kind of culture. You have to be able to read body language and pick up all those unspoken cues to get a sense of what people are feeling. So I think that's really one of the biggest shifts in the paradigm of leadership. I think a couple of other things are driving it. One of them is the rise of data. Because of the internet, we now have answers and can get answers very quickly to how, you know, new products, new initiatives are being received in the marketplace. So we used to have days where, you know, the CEO was on the cover of a glossy business magazine with their arms folded, and the whole notion was that CEOs have all the answers and that they've got golden guts and they put down bets and they play out. And now we can find out almost instantly whether our hunches work. You know, just let's take 5% of our customers on the internet and do some beta testing and see how they respond. So it used to be that CEOs had to have all the answers, or at least that was the impression. What I've come to appreciate is that it's a CEO's job to have great questions, because if you ask the right question, that's going to take your organization into important new directions.
Without question. I would like to elaborate or compare a statement that you made earlier, and that was that CEOs used to be about command and control, now they're about sense and response. That is not unlike what parents do nowadays. when I grew up, it was all about command and control. It was, I'm your father, you're the child, you say, you do as I say, or, you know, I brought you into this world and I can take you out, kind of a thing. Yeah. Now, that is not the case, because not only that's that kind of behavior is not politically correct, that aside, what is absolutely the case is that children, like adults, have become a lot more sophisticated, and they will say some things, yet they will not say other things. And unless you are constantly on your toes and you can take the pulse at any given time and respond to it, you may very well be missing some great insights about your own child.
I think you're right, and I would build on that and say that leadership has certainly become more difficult, and parenting too, because I think in both areas you have to hit this balance point where you are, you know, if you're a CEO of a company, you have to be sensitive to the morale, to the culture, but you also have to have a clear sense of where we're going, and that even though people may not be happy or grumbling about something, that you've got a clear vision and say, no, we need to do this. Because if all you were to do would be to respond to this kind of collective mood of the organization, then you're not leading. And I think that plays out with our kids, too. We have to be sensitive to them and have a keen awareness for what they're feeling. But there are those moments where you need to say to them and give them some tough love and say, look, you need to do this. You may not want to, but it's the right thing to do. And that's why leadership is so hard. And I think the best leaders and the best parents know when to play those different, those different skills.
Exactly. We've got another great question from Hillary from Chicago. Hillary says, Adam, in interviewing over 200 CEOs, who are the top five CEOs that stand out in your mind and why?
That's an unfair question. And since this is also about parenthood, that's like asking me to choose among my children.
Exactly. Very well done.
but I will answer it this way. If you reframe the question a little bit in terms of what were the most surprising, I can provide an answer to that. And to me, the biggest surprise has been the answers that I hear to the very simple questions that I ask the CEOs around hiring. So I always ask them, how do you hire? What questions do you ask? And what I'm amazed is that more than 300 interviews later, I'm still hearing things that I've never heard before. And what I've come to appreciate is that to some degree, CEOs have to be like master psychologists, because when somebody comes into their office for an interview, that person has been scripted and coached and trained, and they know all the right answers. They know that when they're asked about their weaknesses, they're supposed to say, I care too much, I work too hard, I'm a perfectionist. And as one CEO said, it just starts sounding like music after a while. So the challenge for them is they've got to find out in an hour and 40 minutes, what is this person really like? So they come up with very clever questions. I call them bank shot questions, which is, how do you ask something to get around the facade that people present to find out what they're really like? So that's where some of the biggest surprises are. For me, I mean, it's just a few examples. I interviewed Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos, and he asked a couple of interesting questions to job candidates there. He says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you? And I think that's a fascinating question. We can go into some others on the break, but
exactly.
Chris, how weird are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Not weird enough. Well, let's take a break, and I would tell you offline exactly how weird I am. My guest is Adam Bryant. You're listening up to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Adam Bryant. Please visit his website, adambryantbooks.com, and follow him on Twitter at NYT Corner Office. So, interesting questions that CEOs ask. How weird are you? So, other than that, please fill us in.
Well, some other great questions I've heard. Tony Hsieh also asked this one, which he says to job candidates, what is the biggest misperception that people have about you? And then the candidate will respond, and then Tony will come in with the punchline, which is, well, what's the difference between perception and misperception? And again, sort of very clever way of getting at self-awareness. It's also a great screen, right, Chris? Because if somebody says, well, a lot of people think I'm a jerk, but I'm actually a nice guy, then, well, what is the difference between, if people think you're a jerk, then you probably are a jerk. So
that's right.
Very, very smart that way. One of my favorite questions, and I've heard this from several CEOs, they all ask it slightly differently. But you know, there's that standard question, tell me about your strengths. These CEOs phrase it a little different. They say, what is your natural strength? What comes so naturally to you that it's as easy as breathing, that when you do something, maybe a friend or colleague will go, how did you do that? Another way of asking that question is, what are you in the top 5% in the world at? What is your top ninja skill? I love the way of phrasing the question that way. Or what is your superhero strength? And you can get a lot of interesting insights that way that get beyond the, you know, well, I'm good at accounting or marketing. It sort of pushes people and also gets at self-awareness. I heard an interesting question the other day of, if time, money, and talent were no object, what would you do other than what you're doing now? And again, you hear insights. I asked the CEO herself, who said she asked that question. She said, I would either be a jazz singer or president of the United States.
Hey, I think she had the guts to say it, but there, I dare say that there are an awful lot of us who probably will give the same answer, or at least are thinking it.
Right. I guess so, one final one I'll mention,
please,
because I like this one too, is that, again, that, you know, the most common question job interview is, tell me about your strengths and weaknesses. And trying to figure out a way to recast this weakness question, because I kind of have a beef with that question, because it almost implies there's nothing you can do about it. You know, well, my weakness is this. It's sort of like saying I've got a bum leg. You know, it's just the way I am. There's nothing I can do about it. This one CEO I interviewed sort of puts a more interesting spin on it. What he'll do, if I were interviewing you, Chris, I'd say, Chris, so do you think you're going to be different 5 years from now than you are today? And you're probably going to say, well, of course, Adam, of course I'm going to be different. Then I'll say, well, how do you think you're going to be different? In what ways are you going to be different? And what steps do you think you're going to take to become that way? And that's just a very clever, again, kind of bank shot to get a sense of, you know, is this person aware about what they want to get better at? Have they thought about it? So, again, just lots of clever questions from these CEOs.
And do you find that the CEOs are looking for people to be perfect or looking for people to have a thirst and a drive to improve?
They're looking for authenticity, first of all. I mean, in terms of the qualities that they're looking for, I've heard a lot of different answers there. I mean, a lot of CEOs value some things more than others. You hear a lot about passion and desire to learn and hunger, and you got to be smart and all those things. But they're kind of looking for this X factor too, and a big part of it is self-awareness. I've really come to appreciate how important that is, particularly because of the way that work is being done increasingly at companies where there's a lot more project work. You bring together people from different disciplines into small teams. And if you're not self-aware, you're going to throw off the chemistry of the group. And we've all been in situations in those small team settings. And if somebody's a little off-key, if they're a little too aggressive, it can really throw off the chemistry. So I just think self-awareness, if you are self-aware, that can have so many sort of follow-on benefits.
You have some tips for us, things that people should do, should not do, and one of them, which tends to occupy an awful lot of people's time on a daily basis, is you call it the hazards of email. Tell us about that.
Sure. Email was invented as this productivity tool, but I've really come to appreciate how dangerous it can be to corporate culture. Because if you think of corporate culture, to me, culture is really kind of the sum total of the relationships that people have with each other as a group. And email does literally nothing to build relationships between people. But the biggest danger is that it can damage what relationships are there in the first place, because the problem with email is that things get lost in translation. To me, that's the key phrase. So I send you an email, Chris. To me, it's the email I'm sending to you is as simple as, you know, the sky is blue, the ocean is deep. But you might misread the tone and wonder why I'm sending this. So you write me back and I'm going, Chris, like, how did we, you know, why would you think that I was saying that? And suddenly you've got this argument. And even though the productivity tool is supposed to save you time, it actually can chew up your afternoon. The other problem with email that I've heard about from CEOs, and I think this is really true, is that email taps into a really bad part of our brain, which is the part that always wants to have the last word. So when you get in an argument over email, there's always that kind of, oh yeah, and everybody wants to sort of escalate the argument. So I've just heard a lot of companies where the CEO has established clear rules, which is no arguing over email. You do one back and forth, and then you have to pick up the phone, get on Skype, walk down the hall. And that's the crazy thing. Again, you can chew up so much time over disagreements, but if you just walk down the hall, you can resolve the whatever difference of opinion you have in about 2 minutes, and then you're maybe high-fiving each other and walking away, and you've built a relationship. So I really believe that you've got to be careful with email, and the rule I've adopted for myself as a manager is when anything is at stake, anything that could be misread or open to interpretation that could have consequences, I just never do it in email anymore.
Amen to that. And worse than that is text, because that's even more abbreviated. And most people will read text before they read email. And so it can take priority. And because it's so sparse in its volume and by extension in its content, a lot more things are subject to misinterpretation.
Yep.
You talk about a simple plan being another one of your tips.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this earlier, just the importance of the CEOs to have and provide for their employees a simple plan, so you guard against that silo behavior.
And so it's the simple plan is have certain clear priorities, mm-hmm. communicate them clearly and focus on them, as opposed to being a mile wide and an inch deep.
And you have to pick the right ones. I mean, I really believe CEOs earn their pay when they are working at a complicated company and they figure out the three things that matter. Because I've seen this, heard about it from so many companies and CEOs, where sometimes somebody will go into a turnaround situation, a new CEO, and they will take up to 6 months just to figure out what the right three things are to measure, because they understand that if you get those right, because they've seen it play out before, if you get those things right, it will change people's behavior, and they'll start to feel like they want to contribute, that they're part of the team. But if you get those things wrong, that can be really costly, because then you're essentially incentivizing the wrong behavior. And I don't need to tell you, you know, the Peter Druckerism about what gets measured gets managed. So you've got to pick the right three things that are going to drive growth and separate you from your competitors.
You talk about the rules of the road, mm-hmm. clear values.
Yeah, and I'd like to preface the discussion about values, because I think whenever you talk about corporate values, everybody has kind of the same reaction, where they think that sounds like an episode from The Office, right? You know, Michael mm-hmm. Scott coming out and saying, "Hey, everybody, I just wrote our values. Everybody gather around." And we kind of cringe a little bit because we've seen those silly posters on the wall. So first of all, it's important to acknowledge that. But I also think that the companies that do it right, it can have a powerful effect, because what values create are, it's almost like a religion, in the sense that you say, these are the key behaviors that matter here. And it's not that there's a right set of values or a wrong set of values. What really matters is, do they feel organic in the organization? Have they kind of captured the DNA? And the DNA is unique in every company. And then, do you use those things and reinforce them and live them every day? Do you use your values to hire people? You know, is that the criteria? And if people don't live up to the values, do you fire them because of it? Do you give people awards on a monthly, quarterly, annual basis who best embody the values? And then it becomes a powerful force. The biggest danger, of course, is that if you go through the exercise of creating values and put the posters on the wall and give everybody the laminated wallet card, the biggest danger is that if you then tolerate behavior that is directly at odds with the stated values, and that's really dangerous, because that makes people cynical. And as one CEO said, you know, cynicism is the cancer that can really metastasize through an organization. So you've got to do it in a way where you live them every day, because otherwise it can make things worse if you go through the exercise and don't live them every day.
That's very true. There are three more tips that Adam has for us that we're going to talk about in the last segment. In the meantime, we received a question from one of our listeners. I'll ask the question now. Adam will go on a break and we'll take the answer on the other side of it. It comes from Edward from Austin, Texas. Edward is asking, I have heard that many CEOs don't know much about social media and delegate that task. Do CEOs need to have a social media presence, and why? We'll take your answer after a short break. My guest is Adam Bryant. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris. We'll be back in a moment.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epiciu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epiciu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epiciu. My guest is Adam Bryant. Please visit his website, adambryantbooks.com, and follow him on Twitter at NYT Corner Office. So Edward from Austin, Texas is asking this question. I have heard that many CEOs don't know much about social media and delegate that task. Do CEOs need to have a social media presence and why?
I think they should have a social media presence for the purposes of culture more than anything else, because to me, one of the most important words when we talk about managing and leading people is trust. I would put that at the top of the list in terms of important qualities. I heard this great story from one CEO during a company survey, an anonymous survey of his employees. His name was John Duffy, and one of the questions on the survey was, do you trust John Duffy? And if all your listeners think about the boss they have or the bosses they've had in the past, that's a simple gut check question. You don't have to think about it. Either you trust somebody or you don't. And I think one of the benefits of social media is that you can let people into your life a bit with Facebook, and they can start seeing you as a person, you know, with your family, with your friends, out on the golf course. One CEO I talked to has a pretty active Facebook presence. Sometimes when he's meeting with employees, they'll ask him questions like, I see that you wear a lot of pink golf shirts. Why do you do that? And they're But I think it's powerful because they're seeing them as human beings, and they want to understand them at a human level, not just as a, you know, do you have a good strategy for the next quarter? So that's where I think it can have a lot of benefit.
Absolutely. Let's get back to the helpful tips you've been giving us. Your next one is, you call it a little respect.
Mm-hmm. And I think you have to treat employees with respect. I know that sounds obvious, but let's be honest. A lot of us have had bad bosses over the years who didn't treat us with respect. And worst of all, to me, the biggest sin of bosses is when you humiliate somebody in front of their colleagues. Because if you, you know, dip into books about neuroscience, you'll learn that that fires up the same part of our brain that lights up when we experience physical pain. And that's really damaging to a culture, because if you don't treat people with respect, then they're going to come into work in kind of a defensive crouch. They're going to check part of themselves at the door, and you're not going to get their best self. And I think that expression is pretty powerful. I've heard it from a few CEOs where you want to get people to bring their best self to work every day. And you can only do that if you treat them with respect.
The next one you call, it's all about the team.
Mm-hmm. And that works almost as an equation with this notion of a little respect. So you should treat people with respect, but you should also expect something as well, which is you got to hold people accountable. Everybody has to play their position on the team. And I prefer the team metaphor to the family metaphor with companies. And I know a lot of companies say we're a family here, and I think the impulse is right, because you want to send a signal that we don't just care about you, we care about you as a person and your extended family. But just day to day, I think you need to operate more as a team. Everybody has to play their position. So you treat people with respect, but you also hold them accountable. One of the best rules that I heard from a CEO, what he tells employees, he says, if you say you're going to do something, do it. Don't say anything that you're not going to follow up on, because back to the point about being quick and nimble, if you work in an organization and everybody is saying to each other, yeah, I'll get you that report on Thursday, or, you know, I'll get back to you by 5 o'clock, and nobody does what they're saying, that can really slow down a company. And I'm sure you found this, Chris, but just over the years, I find myself, you know, cutting most of the people I meet and work with into just one of two camps. There's people who do what they say they're going to do, and there's people who don't. Just the other day, I heard a great expression from a CEO, which is he refers to it as the say-to-do ratio.
That's very accurate, because, again, whatever kind of field you're in, whatever your everyday work is, you depend on others to give you information, data, results that they promised that they will give you, or that they are expected to give you. If they do not pitch, you cannot play the game, because it is you're a link in a chain, and nobody can operate in a vacuum. So that is something that we all pay it enough lip service that we depend on others. But unless you have experienced the lack of dependability, you can't really appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
And last but not least, I love the title of this one, Adult Conversations.
And this plays into parenthood as well. But
yes.
If you go back to the equation of treat people with respect, you have to hold them accountable. In any organization, you're going to have moments of, you know, where people aren't performing well, and you have to have an adult conversation with them, a frank discussion, give them maybe some tough feedback. And I'm sure you've seen this, Chris, but I really believe that most managers go out of their way to avoid having these kind of conversations, because they are stressful. You don't know what to expect. You don't know how the person's going to react. So a lot of managers kind of rationalize it away, which is, maybe they're having a bad day. Happens a second time and say, you know, I got to talk to them, but I'm so busy today. And all of a sudden they're waiting 9 months to bring it up in the performance review. And then the employee really gets their back up, and with good reason, when they bring it up then. So I've talked to a lot of companies where they really have a culture of, let's be frank, let's be direct with each other. They even train people on how to have these frank discussions, and there is an art to them. There is a way to do them so that people don't justifiably get their back up. And so much of organizations and being a leader, to me, is about releasing the collective energy that's in the group. But the problem is, if you don't have these adult conversations, then all this energy kind of gets bottled up, right? People are kind of grinding their teeth. They're angry about something. Problems fester. And you've been a leader for so many years, Chris. I'm sure you've had your share of adult conversations. You know that when you do have them, there's often a very good payoff, because you release all that energy. It's like, I'm so glad we had this talk. I'm so glad you talked to me about this. And then we're on the same page, and then the person goes off and they're kind of pumped up.
That's exactly right. And there is an art and a science to that, because all too often people will shy away from having those adult conversations because they feel that, you know, this is going to be unpleasant. I don't want to have the conversation. I'm going to have to say things that I don't want to say, not because they're not true, but because they are not pleasant to hear. And therein lies the bedrock of leadership. And in my mind, that is that the test or the litmus test of a true leader is one that can tell his or her people less than pleasant things, can allow them to fail without feeling like failures. There's a big difference in between the two.
Yep, and I think at the core of it is that, you know, whether you care about the person, are you committed to helping the person succeed? Are you committing to helping the company succeed? Because people can sense from a mile away if you're the kind of leader who wants your people to succeed. Even if somebody's performing at a B level and you need them to be A players, if you have a boss and you can always sense, it's like, are they on my side of the table? Do they want me to succeed and this is just giving me, you know, tough but good feedback, or do they not want me to succeed?
Very true. I'll have to let this be the last word, and I want to thank you so much for your time and input. It's been a wonderful conversation. I hope you come back and join us some other time.
I will. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you. I hope all of you join me next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk for Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. We'll talk more next week. Thank you for listening. I'm Chris Effacio.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Effacio, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.